wanna tell you everything I've been told. So Zane, I was contemplating on what to do this weekend because I was kind of bored. And I was thinking, you know what, let me just take a random drive and go dive into the Colorado River and just take a swim. But then I realized that might not be such a good idea.
No, absolutely not. So if you don't know, Colorado is going through a huge problem right now, specifically with their Animas River that has been polluted. And by who? The EPA. If you don't know who the EPA is, they are the Environmental Protection Agency, and they justify their existence. They justify their existence by saying that they're here to protect the Earth's natural resources, specifically from big corporations that, you know, only have profit in mind.
Right.
And recently what happened is the EPA was going and checking out some old mines that was in the Colorado, because we have a major problem. There's so many abandoned mines in the west part of our country.
Like old gold mines from the gold rush.
And sometimes the metal and stuff seeps into the water. So they were checking that out.
For contamination.
Barged in there. Apparently reports were saying that they didn't really consider or bring into any other local groups, local organizations that have been trying to specifically deal with this problem.
I'm familiar with the area.
Mm-hmm. And what they happened is with their machinery, they accidentally ripped open one of the dams and they flooded this river with toxic sludge. If you check out pictures, we'll definitely throw them on our social media sites at The MR Show. You see this orange tint color in this huge, beautiful river that's no longer beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Look at the pictures right now. It looks like a yellow river.
Yeah, there was. As funny as it is, like, you're like, is this Photoshop?
It looks Photoshop.
It's real. This accident has affected three different states: Utah, New Mexico, and Colorado.
Wow. So I guess it was originally reported at 1 million gallons of toxins, and you were telling me that's false?
And this is why the EPA sucks. When the accident initially happened, they tried to downplay the spillage. They said that it was only 1 million gallons of waste, and it wasn't really a big deal. It wasn't going to affect too many parts. Later on, they were forced to come out and say, okay, well, what we originally said, it's not the case. Instead of 1 million gallons, it turned out to be 3 million gallons. And this orangey waste contains like high levels of arsenic, lead, cadmium, aluminum, all these like very poisonous things.
Cancerous materials, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah,
right?
When the water was tested, it had 12,000 more times the amount of lead that normal water should
have.
It's choked off the main water supply for many, many farmers along the way, especially the drinking supply as well. This includes the nation of the Navajo Nation. They definitely have hurt them. They've told them that don't use your water for your farming. Don't use it for your livestock.
This is like the hottest part of the summer, too.
It is the hottest part of the year.
Wow.
And this is the peak farming season for them. So it's dramatically hurting them.
I bet.
Yeah, and even the city of Durango in La Puente County in Colorado declared a state of emergency. Like, that's how big of an issue this is.
That's ridiculous. And I see that the EPA is now taking full responsibility of it, which is nice to see. But, I mean, come on, someone's got to get axed over there.
Yeah, they even admitted.
Get into trouble or something.
They admitted we were too slow on reacting, and we weren't forthcoming with all the information right away when we should have.
And they also said that they didn't even, like you mentioned, they didn't include locals who knew the area and knew how sensitive or maybe not sturdy the ground was, and they just went in there thinking they knew everything.
Yeah, in addition to the health effects that this is going to have, and not only the people potentially can have on the people surrounding the river, it's definitely hurting local businesses. This Animas River was known as the River County of Colorado. There's so many like water sports and local businesses all around the river,
sure.
Like fishing and tubing and kayaking,
wakeboarding, whatever.
The river shut down. They can't use it. Apparently, it's been reported that $150,000 have been lost just this month over the spillage.
And it's going to be more than that, I'm sure. That sounds like a very conservative estimate. If I might say.
Yeah. Now, the EPA really lacks credibility with people. The Environmental Secretary of New Mexico even said that he was going to order their own water testing from the San Juan because they didn't trust the EPA and what they would say, what was in the water and what wasn't.
Well, that goes to show you how much people are actually trusting the government agency that's being allowed to protect the environment, and no one's even taking them seriously.
Yeah, and it's so sad to say that this is happening from the one agency that's supposed to protect our natural resources. Just to show you how shady they got, there's been reports from the Navajo president that these people were going door to door to elderly Navajo members.
Like citizens.
Mm-hmm. And they were trying to get them to sign these forms where they would specifically claim how much money and damages they want from this incident, and saying that, you know, once you sign this or whatever, you can't come back and file for more damages. So we don't even know the long-term effects yet. And they're trying to already
put a band-aid on it and be like, hey, don't sue us later. And don't come at us for millions.
Exactly. And the EPA later comes out and says, no, we didn't do that. But why would Navajo people lie about this? There's no incentive to say that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very sad.
Agendas and money, see? Agendas and money.
This is why we have the show, Nick, to talk about this kind of stuff. Now, there hasn't been just backward progress with water supply. Recently, LA County has made huge progress towards trying to preserve water. Nick, have you heard of shade balls? I know you have.
I know you were mentioning them to me, and I'm looking at pictures now that you told me to check it out. So California is going through one of the worst droughts ever in recorded history.
Yeah, we're entering our fourth season of being in a drought.
And counting.
Yeah, apparently last winter was the driest winter California has ever had.
I'm pretty sure I can count how many times it rained on like one or two hands.
Mm-hmm. I was checking out pictures the other day of just like certain places in California, like before and after pictures, like after the drought. And it's just really bad. I mean, you see rivers that aren't even there, bridges that say, hey, don't jump into this river, and there's nothing there. As comical as it is, it's not. It's terrifying,
actually.
It's just
so sad now. It's to the point where we need to stop watering our grass.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad that you brought that out. San Francisco, the city, has actually started a campaign saying brown is the new green to try to encourage people to let their grass just go brown. And they even have little signs and everything.
Yeah, I even heard of a couple of turf companies out here saying they'll put in free AstroTurf in your lawns if you allow them to do it, because they're trying to promote, hey, no more regular grass. Mm-hmm. It's all go artificial.
I was going to say that industry is probably booming right now in California because it's such an eyesore to have brown.
Well, right now, what it is, if you do that turf thing, you get a tax write-off from the state, so you actually, it ends up being free.
And I think that's one of the initiatives that the state has trying to put in place to help this California drought. So going back to these shade balls.
Yeah, what's up with these shade balls?
They're these little, not so little, maybe like tennis ball, softball size.
It's like a softball size, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of these black balls, they each cost only 36 cents, right? So what these actually do is when you put them in water, they help reduce evaporation, which loss of water through heat. We all know that, right?
Okay.
Go back to our science class.
All right.
So not only does it help with that, it also protects against animals and dirt. Oh. So a total of 96 million of these balls has been poured into the LA reservoirs.
A lot of balls.
And the city definitely has them to making this, you know, this initiative, because they're the first city to ever do that.
That's awesome.
But apparently these balls are supposed to help evaporation of up to 300 million gallons of water per year.
Well, that's what I like to hear right
there. So that's a lot. And we'll definitely throw out pictures of that on our Facebook. You can check that out at the MR page.
It's a cool little video of them releasing the balls.
Even like the mayor was there. Yeah, it looks kind of cool. Yeah. I was reading an article and the person compared them to those Pokemon balls, the shadow balls.
I know what you're talking about.
They look exactly like that. So go LA.
Millennial stuff right there, man.
Exactly.
So Zane, I got an idea for the EPA out in Colorado.
What is that?
They should hit up Water is Life, because they're coming out with a revolutionary new book called The Drinkable Book.
How is a book going to help with contaminated water?
That is a great question. And thank you to Dr. Teresa Dankovic, a young chemist. She has come up with a solution to that question.
How a book can help me with my water contamination issues? Please stop keeping me in the dark. What's up?
So the drinkable book is made with filter paper that can turn sewage infested and contaminated water into drinkable water comparable to that of tap water in the United States.
How does that even work?
So each page is coated with a silver nanoparticles, which kill diseases like cholera, E. coli, and typhoid. It kills up to 99% of bacteria from dirty water, making it not
99%?
Making it unlike tap water in the United States. The text of the book is printed on food grade ink, which also includes information on safe water habits. So if you're reading the book, it's telling you how to keep your water clean, because these books are going to be used in third or second world countries where they might not know water safety as well as we do here, and we take it for granted. So it's telling them how to do that.
That's crazy. That's crazy technology. Wait, how much does that cost for a book, though?
Okay, so this is getting to the best part. So this is going to be a revolutionary piece of paper, because not only is it going to help filter water for over 30 days, a sheet of paper, so one book can provide over 4 years of clean water for one person. It only costs cents to make, Zana.
Really?
Cents. 30-40 cents to be exact.
Oh,
an entire book. So 4 years of clean water for less than a dollar, basically.
And this just came out this year.
This just came out, and even more good news on this. No one's trying to get rich off it. The chemist who made the paper and who made the book is donating it and donating her ideas to the Water is Life Foundation so they can mass produce it on the next production level and hopefully bring clean water to those who don't have it.
That's phenomenal. What a great
invention.
Isn't
that amazing?
Welcome to 2015.
So that's something we like to promote. So huge shout out to Dr. Teresa Dankovich. We're going to post this article. Check out the Drinkable Book trailer video. It's about a 2-minute video. We'll post it on our social media accounts. So you guys got to check those out.
It's so inspiring for me to see people come together and take the streets and really protest their cause and stand up against something that they feel needs to be done or doesn't need to be done. But when I saw headlines of protesters hanging from a bridge in Oregon, I was just taken aback, and I definitely checked out the story. 13 Greenpeace protesters hung themselves from one of the state's bridges and protest for the Arctic drilling. Nick, did you hear about this?
I did. It actually was the St. John's Bridge. Mm-hmm. This was July 30th, July 31st.
Yeah, apparently they managed to hang from a little bit more than 24 hours. They did manage to delay one of the ships that was actually headed toward the Arctic for support. It was essential support for it to happen. And they lasted more than 24 hours hanging on the bridge and stopping it. They had people hanging from the bridge, kayakers down for support. They said that they had supplies that they were planning on staying even a couple of days.
It's cool to see that they were trying to band together to prevent this Arctic drilling from happening and to keep that ecosystem together and that environment untouched by humans and by our drilling.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. What caused these people to get their rock climbing gear and hang from a bridge? Why is this such a bad thing? What are people worried about? Number one, like Nick said, the Arctic resource is untapped, right? And drilling in the Arctic is extremely dangerous. The weather conditions alone are just horrendous for working. Mm-hmm. There's hurricane storms, 20-foot swells. There's huge sea heights.
It's freezing,
exactly. So already the conditions to work there are very hard for humans. Now, statistics have even shown that if drilling starts in this, I think it was Chukchi Sea. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it. But if drilling happens there, there's a 75% chance of a huge oil spill. 75% chance.
Now, where's that coming from?
That's coming from the Interior Department. They're part of the federal branch of the United States, and they're meant for managing and conserving federal land and natural resources. So Okay. They're definitely an independent entity.
Right.
And that's what they were saying, that there's a 75% chance of an oil spill. Now, this is crazy because the Arctic is home to many, many wildlife, many of them being endangered. So there's wildlife, there's fish that rely on the wildlife, also the surrounding areas. People rely on wildlife for food.
And what's wrong with just keeping a part of this earth untouched by human drilling or human consumption of resources?
Especially in 2015, where we have all these new technologies coming out, so where we potentially don't need oil in the future. And especially the amount of oil that is in the Arctic does not justify it. Apparently, there's only 3 years worth of oil that would like to support the world's demand. There's only 3 years worth of it.
Well, that 3 years is still estimated $26 billion worth of barrels of oil. So that's still a lot of money to someone.
Of course. Now, if and when the oil does spill, there's not much you can do about it. In fact, not much. There's absolutely nothing you can do about it. An official from a Canadian firm that specializes in oil spill response, he said, there's really no solution or method today that we're aware of that can actually recover oil from the Arctic. And history has shown that with like the Exxon spilling and the deep water spill. I don't know if you know this, Nick, but more than 20 years after that Exxon disaster in Alaska, oil can still be found in the environment.
Wow.
Yeah, so the reason is because of the way the environment is set up, because it's so cold there, the environment takes longer to break down the oil. So
right.
Because there's no sunlight, because there's the cold weather,
right.
It'll still be there. There's nothing you can do. And
it's kind of being preserved a
little bit. Yeah, and the Arctic is so remote. Like, if something does happen, who's going to come to safety?
Yeah, you can't really call anyone.
No.
They're so far away from the nearest population.
Yeah, they don't have the infrastructure to support it. The closest Coast Guard is 1,000 miles away from where they're going to be drilling. I mean, this just spells disaster. And this is why those protesters were willing to propel themselves from the bridge, if not stop it, at least bring awareness. And this is why we're talking about it today. It's so scary because, like we said, global warming is already hugely impacting these animals. I don't know if you know, but this area is warming up twice as fast as everywhere else in the world.
I have heard of that, and especially with the glaciers and the ice melting at an unprecedented rate. We're recording this on Monday, August 17th, and unfortunately, I got some bad news for you and those protesters, Z. Feds allow a Shell to drill for oil in Arctic Ocean off Alaska is the name of a headline that I'm reading.
Uh-oh.
And the federal government on Monday, the 17th of August, just gave Royal Dutch Shell the final permit it needs to drill for oil in the Arctic Ocean off Alaska's northwest coast for the first time in more than two decades. So they tried, Z, and we can commend them for trying, but the battle is not over yet. A lot of people are saying a lot of these protesters are still trying to fight this, but as of right now, they got the green light to drill up there, and their ships have already been waiting for the green light, and they're going to start probably as soon as tomorrow.
Feels like we're sitting on our hands with nothing to do but shout at them.
It's
so frustrating.
Can't give up. The protesters aren't giving up. They said they're still going to fight this, and this is just another battle in the war. They're trying to save Alaska, but as of right now, looks like Alaska's going to be untapped for that $26 billion worth of oil up there.
You mean it is going to be tapped now?
Yeah, it's going to be tapped. It's going to be free-flowing, actually. Now, I know last week we didn't get a chance to comment on what happened on the Mike Brown anniversary of his death. That night, they had a protest in the streets and in the city, just protesting for more change and outrage that there hasn't been enough change or enough new laws made. However, things took a turn for the worst when shots rang out. Another young man was killed. And actually, two young men were killed that night because once shots rang out, there's a video of another 18-year-old young man pulling a gun from his hand, from his waist, and the police gunned him down. So there was actually two fatalities that night. And the reason I want to bring this up, not only because of the two fatalities and how in Ferguson a year later, not only was Mike Brown killed the year before, but a year later, you think there would be change in that same city? Well, same location, a year to the day, and there's two more additional deaths. And the reason why it struck me so real and in my face is because, Zaina, I was watching it unfold.
What do you mean? You were there?
I might as well have been there. I was here in California, so I wasn't physically there. Mm-hmm. However, have you ever heard of Ustream?
Yeah, vaguely. It's like some type of video
it's a streaming app.
Okay.
So Ustream, Livestream, there's a couple of streaming apps. Those two in particular I downloaded for my iPhone. Basically, it puts you in connection with any phone that's streaming anywhere. So if you're streaming in a city, I can watch your stream and watch your feed like off on you from there. So there was like three or four different streamers that night in Ferguson, specifically there to cover this event of just what's going on that night, just reporters there to cover it. And this scene breaks out, and Z, I was watching it. It was going from a peaceful, actually looked really boring. Just people were just standing around, just hanging out at night, kind of like a 4th of July theme where there's a sense of urgency in the air and, something might happen. And then all of a sudden you start hearing, there's actually an interview with the acting interim police commissioner, and shots start ringing out. You hear pop, 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 pop in the background.
That's scary.
And even the police commissioner looks at the cameraman, looks at the reporter, like, is this those shots? And all of a sudden you hear gunfire, gunfire, pop, 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 pop. Everyone disperses. More gunfire rings out. And now at this point, I'm watching and I'm being captivated by the images and the sounds that I'm hearing. I just hear shot after shot after shot. At least like 40 rounds went off of gunfire. And people were just scattered. And it was just such a crazy scene to watch. And I recommend anyone download the Ustream app and add just the protest or anywhere that there's live action going on. Take a look in, because it just added this perspective to me and this different element that I had never seen before, because it's different seeing something on CNN, maybe after the fact or like a cut up, but to see it live unfiltered off someone's phone and you can hear the people talking, I felt like I was there. It was crazy.
This is the Connect the Dots segment. What you're about to hear is a series of facts and information, which separately may seem like unrelated or insignificant events. However, many feel otherwise. There are some who believe that when these, quote, dots of information are connected, they form a picture that reveals their true nature and intention. The issue we are going to discuss is the recent explosions located in Tianjin, China. Many have voiced their speculations of a possible cover-up involving the real cause of these massive explosions. A cover-up, if foiled, may reveal the start of a new world war between the United States and China. We have compiled a series of events, which individually may seem meaningless, however, once connected together, these stories might provide a different narrative and shed light of the real truth our governments are trying to cover up. June 5, 2015. China cyber attacks the United States and obtains over 18 million personnel files located in on a series of federal record storage servers. Major American companies such as Google and Blue Cross were also victims of the hack. And where is China's supercomputer located? Good question. China's National Supercomputing Center is located in the city of Shenzhen, China. The Shenzhen Computer Institute has been active as far back as 1984 and is now the location of China's largest and fastest supercomputing center. Fast forward. June 29, 2015. President Barack Obama signs an executive order authorizing the creation of new supercomputing research initiative called the National Strategic Computing Initiative. Its goal: to pave the way for the first supercomputer, a computer that's about 30 times faster than today's fastest machines and able to mimic the human brain. August 11, 2015. China devalues the yuan by 1.9%, with it eventually falling to 2%, sending, quote, shockwaves around the world and setting off a, quote, devastating impact to the U.S. economy. These actions would collapse the U.S. dollar and destroy the U.S. economy, sending the United States into an economic freefall. One day later, on Wednesday, the 12th of August 2015, a series of explosions occurred at a container storage station at the port of Tianjin, China. Over 100 people were killed and hundreds of others were injured. Chinese media reported that the initial blast was from unknown hazardous materials stored in shipping containers or at a plant warehouse. August 16, 2015. Obama issues a stern warning about the presence of Chinese government agents operating secretly in the United States. This is a nice story, however, we all know that the chemical explosions explanation is nothing but a complete and total cover-up effort by the Chinese government. The first explosion occurred and registered as a 2.3 magnitude earthquake. Initial reports estimate the first explosion was equivalent to 3 tons of TNT. A second, more powerful explosion occurred, causing most of the damage and injuries, with shock waves felt many kilometers away. The second explosion has been estimated to be equivalent to 21 tons of TNT. However, this does not explain the resulting crater left in the ground, which evidence left concludes that a 5-kiloton blast created the crater. Was it a tactical nuclear bomb? No. Many believe the weapon used was the secret Pentagon weapon named, quote, the Rod of God. The Rod of God weapon is a space-based top-secret kinetic weapon that can be dropped from high orbit to strike almost any land-based target. The weapon instantly destroys 6 city blocks on the edge of the city of Shenzhen. The Rod of God weapon deployment by the US Pentagon was America's shot across the bow to send a powerful warning message to China, while all the while dismissing the attack as a domestic chemical explosion. Are these all coincidences? Are these bullets of information irrelevant? Or is there a bigger plot and agenda being hidden from the American public and the world by both governments? You decide. Connect the dots.
So Zane, I want to take it back a few steps. What was your initial reaction from seeing the video of the explosion when I showed you that night?
It was terrifying. It was really scary, specifically as the explosions escalated. The video I watched at first was someone just kind of recording it, like, oh my God, check this out. They were kind of laughing in the background, kind of like, oh, this is kind of crazy. And then,
yeah, the sound we heard earlier.
Yeah. And as you see it progress, it's terrifying. If I was in that situation, I think for sure someone just dropped a bomb on us. I'd be terrified.
Especially that last explosion, it looked like a bomb of some
sort. The whole sky lit up. Exactly. That cloud came up. I mean, it was definitely a scary sight to see, and even harder to believe that that was a chemical explosion.
Right. So how do you feel about the evidence I presented to you as far as these breadcrumbs of information, mm-hmm. how going back to the cyber attack And then from the cyber attack, Obama wants to build his own computer. And then you got them, the United States not allowing China into the SDR, which angered China.
Yeah.
Maybe they lower their currency because of that.
There's a lot of things that add up, specifically when you talk to me about that cyber attack. I mean, that's a huge issue to have, you know,
over 18 million accounts.
Our information. Yeah, just hacked and assets. Puts a lot of people, puts a lot of people in danger. Definitely want to use the word national security here.
Google, Blue Cross, the government, they all were.
And the if you look at this crater, like you were telling me how there's no way that a normal
surface,
you know,
explosion.
Exactly. It would be that. And it just adds up too well. It just, so there's so much incentive for the United States to do this. We have such tension between us and this country. And it's scary to feel like this is a weapon now in 2015, where everything's online, everything, all the secrets can be accessed. This supercomputer really is a weapon. So they have every reason to put it down. But it's, you know, it's very sad that, you know, people lost their lives over this, and our hearts go out to them.
This wouldn't be the first time the United States used, you know, a civilian location to attack. I mean, Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
People sometimes say the cliche statement of the ends justify the means. And like you were saying, it's next to the port. The supercomputer needs to be cooled. It's most likely underground, which explains why the explosion was so deep.
The fact that just attacking the port itself would affect China's economy with exports and imports right away.
And really, the biggest thing that really puts on the lights for me, that really ties us all together, is China enacting martial law. If this was just an explosion, something that happened because of the factory, there would be no need for the government to do this.
And they're going like overboard trying to say, oh, there's like 300, 400, 500 tons of chemicals, sodium nitrate, potassium nitrate, all these volatile chemicals that they store there. And they're trying to say that that was the cause.
So then if that was the case, wouldn't there be some type of health issues now going on within that, whoever's in that area?
And that's what they're worried about. And also, if that's the case, then why would those explosions happen now? Like, why, if they were storing those chemicals before, why didn't the explosions happen 2 months ago, a month ago? The timing of the explosion is just very suspicious.
Just because of what? What timing makes it suspicious for you?
Of how everything went down these last couple of days, and then once China lowers their currency, an explosion happens.
Yeah, it's
if those chemicals have been stored there, I mean, why couldn't they explode a week from today?
Well, I mean, you can't say that. Why didn't it explode? I mean, accidents happen. But it's like you said, the timing is too perfect. It's too complete.
Too perfect.
The crater, the way it happened, it just doesn't add up.
The crater's huge. It doesn't look like a normal surface explosion. It looks like something was either penetrated the surface or was exploded from underground and went outward.
When we present these connect the dots segments, so we have to really be careful. We don't want to come across and just kind of connect arbitrary things. There might be other explanations, but then on the other hand, Nick, these things aren't going to be presented like this in the media. So
right.
I think it is our responsibility to come a bit and say, hey, these things are really adding up. But I don't know. Do you think there's any other explanation? Do you think that it could have just been a chemical spill?
I feel like it could have just been a chemical spill. You're always reminding me that, you know, make sure you stay to the facts and don't speculate too much.
But hold on. The facts can always be spun and repositioned.
Exactly.
So that's the problem.
And the facts could not be the facts. They're the ones that we're getting. So we try to do the best with what information we see. And it takes some digging on our end.
Definitely. Because this information is not going to come up in your first Google search. It's not going to be on the first page.
No,
it's not something that's going to be easily presented. And this is, again, another huge reason why we have the show. This is Media Evolved. This is us trying to bring you really what potentially happened. And of course, as time goes on, we're definitely going to keep our eye on this story and see, is there going to be any like toxicology reports where they talk about the health issues that people are going to have? Like, what's going to come next? Is this going to die off? What's going to happen with martial law? I know they just said that they're going to extend this for another 3 months.
Yeah.
Why would they need to be doing this?
Exactly.
Are they preparing for something?
Mm-hmm.
Also, if they did get attacked, how is China going to respond now?
And if they were to have been attacked, it kind of makes sense for China to play it off like it was a chemical explosion. That way they don't tip their hand as far as to the United States saying, hey, we know what's up with you guys, even though they might already know what's going on. And the U.S. might know that, too.
Definitely. That's very true.
And another tidbit of information, Zaina, local police raids have already begun at locations of bloggers and independent journalists who have attempted to report on quote-unquote untrue stories of what really happened in Tianjin, China. So basically, the Chinese government is in this complete cover-up mode.
Oh, my gosh. How likely is that for them to do this, though? I mean, that sounds crazy, right? Automatically, the fact that they're raiding people that are saying otherwise definitely smells
fishy.
Doesn't smell right.
Yeah.
But does China always do things like this when if a journalist come out and they, you know, go against the wave?
I mean, they are communists, so I mean, I wouldn't put it past them. But if it was an, I guess the question is, if it was an accident, would they be doing this?
That's a very good question.
If it really was a chemical explosion and they know it was an accident, would they even care?
So, Revolvers, what do you think? We're very anxious to know your opinions on this. Go ahead and comment on our Facebook page. That's where you can talk the most, at The MR Page. You can always check us out, too, on Twitter, on Instagram, at The MR Show. This is definitely interesting, and it definitely, definitely doesn't smell right.
And all tourists right now are supposed to stay in their hotels or register with local police or risk arrest.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's locked down over there right now.
Thank you again for listening to The Millennial Revolver Show. As always, I'm your host, Zaina Farah. Catch us at our new time on Wednesdays, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget, we'll be posting a lot of these stories and pictures on all our social media sites. You can catch us on Tumblr, Twitter, and Instagram at The MR Show, and on our Facebook at The MR Page. We'll catch you next week.
That ain't my girl, that's my nigga. Catch me out on Ocean Drive with her. Catch me in the whip, riding with her. Hey, sipping something, bumping big, hypnotized with her. Pray you get that job in Tampa. That's only 4 hours away. Take a car, take a plane, baby, whichever is faster. Oh, whichever one is in a hassle. Oh, damn.